We're studying tonight, beginning in Genesis chapter 12. The Lord said to Abram, "Go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you, and I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." This is very often referred to as the threefold promise, or the three promises made to Abram by God. And as you look at your outline, you'll notice there are three there. One, a great nation. And as you think about that, there are going to be other places where God is going to add to this the kind of blessing that's going to be seen. But God is going to not only bless Abram, but all those who bless him, and through him all nations of the earth will be blessed. And that would be the first promise that we have of the Messiah that's recorded here, unless you take the one given to Eve in the garden when Adam is told that the serpent will bruise his heel. But the other is that Abram's name will be great. Now, as you think about these things, you sit here and of all the nations of the earth, you wonder why it is that God chose Israel. And it rests in this man, Abram. And he has promised that through him, there are certain things that God has purposed that he's going to cause to occur. And he says that these things are true. Going back to there again, "I will make you a great nation." Now, as we start thinking about this, I will tell you right now that Abram is my age when he leaves Haran. I'm old, and at that time, we do not know how long the average age was. We can't tell. We have no way of knowing this. And so there are those who are skeptical about people who are able to do this. And obviously, with God's help, nothing is impossible. But more than that, Abram had to be of rather good stock. Now, there's a lot that I want to show you here tonight. And I have taken these, by the way, these maps are from e-sword.net. Any of you who want maps, to look at maps, you can go on there. There are a number that are free, and you can download them on your computer for free. On your phone, it costs, I think, $3. And they don't show up very well on your phone. This is a huge map. But as you start looking at this, what we're doing here is we're looking at Ur of the Chaldees, and he goes to Haran. And this is where he is 75 years old. He then travels down here, and this is going to be a distance of about 1,500 miles, that he's going to come down into this area. And as we look at this, then he's going to come down here to, I thought it was Shechem is on there, but right over here, we'll look at it in the next map. But he comes all the way down. He comes actually all the way down into Egypt to Zoan before he goes back up to where he's going to be located. And just to give you an idea again, if you start looking at this map right here, you'll see that even here, the Sea of Galilee is a little bitty point. And the reason for that is that the Sea of Galilee is only about 7 miles wide and 13 miles long. So as you think about this, it's not a sea, not as we think of seas. It's a lake. Actually, it's a big pond. But it is a deep pond. It is about 90 feet deep. And the water is fresh coming down out of the mountains that are up here. And you'll see that better in some later maps that I have to show you some things. It says Abram took Sarah his wife and Lot his nephew and all her possessions which they had accumulated and all the persons that had acquired in Haran. In other words, they bought slaves. And they set out for the land of Canaan. Thus they came to the land of Canaan. And Abram passed through the land as far as the site of Shechem to the oak of Moreh. Now the Canaanite was then in the land. And the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your descendants I will give this land. So as you're thinking about this, here's one single fellow traveling in this, along with his family and his servants. And he says, to your descendants I will give this land. That's a real bold statement to make, but you realize that they've occupied that space for a couple of thousand years, or for more than that, a couple of thousand years since the Lord's been there, and thousands of years before that. He says, so he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. Then he proceeded from there to the mountain on the east of Bethel and pitched his tent. They would pronounce that Bethel. I grew up with a little town near us that was named Bethel. There are a lot of towns in this country that are named after places in Israel, by the way, if you haven't already figured that out. Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. And there he built an altar to the Lord, and he called upon the name of the Lord. And Abram journeyed on, continuing toward the Negev. The Negev is a desert. Let's see. Let's go down to, well, that's that same map. But I'll show you on this what we're talking about here. The Negev, here's the Dead Sea. And the Negev is this area that is just right here, just south of Beersheba and a little bit to the west. That's called the Negev Desert. And these places are extremely barren, according to our thinking, but they're also mountain ranges. Just as you see down here, the same thing is true here, except the mountains are not quite as large. And so that's the place where Abram comes. And it says at verse 10 of chapter 12, there was a famine in the land. The kind of famine that happens and, well, quite frankly, is happening around the world at the present time, except for the fact that we have incredible means of transportation. They had to do these things by camel and donkey, and you couldn't carry much grain very far. So Abram just got the whole bunch up and says, let's go down. And when he came near to Egypt, earlier you heard Joshua read of Abimelech. Abram has done this before, and it hasn't worked out well, but he turns to his wife Sarah, and he says, see now, I know that you're a beautiful woman. And it will come about when the Egyptians see you that they will say, this is his wife, and they will kill me, but they will let you live. Please say that you are my sister, so that it may go well with me because of you, and that I may live on account of you. And so, again, they're going to go down all the way down into Egypt to a place called Zoan. Right over here is where this is covered. So they've come through the desert part of this area, and again, I can't overemphasize how much it will help you in your understanding of the Scriptures. If you're ever able to go, go. I wouldn't recommend Egypt at the present time, and it's unfortunate because there's just a tremendous amount that you can learn in Egypt as well. But in going to Israel, you have less chance of something happening to you unless you go into certain areas near the Palestine border that they'll try to warn you. But you're safer there than you are going into inner city Baltimore or New York. Either one. I mean, it's just something that if you're ever able, you ought to go see. If for nothing else, just to understand. We sang a lot of songs about rocks. There are a lot of big rocks in Israel. It's just absolutely incredible. And you can see why the Scriptures talk about our Lord as a rock, as a fortress, something that you can't overcome because they are just incredibly large. And as we read concerning Pharaoh then in verse 16, therefore he treated Abram well for her sake and gave him sheep and oxen and donkeys and male and female servants and female donkeys and camels. He must have really been struck with this woman's beauty because that's a lot of money. Even today, if you just start saying multiple sheep and oxen and donkeys and male and female and servants, you're talking about thousands of dollars. Even today, if you just look at any of those, none of those things are going to be worth less than that. and the equivalent at that time. But the Lord struck Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. Then Pharaoh called Abram and said, "What is this you have done to me? Why did you not tell me she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister so that I took her from my wife? Now then, here's your wife. Take her and go." You can understand if you have all these things happening and you ask why, the reason is God looks upon this as a terrible thing. And it is always amazing. It's one of the things that you, when you look at the scriptures, you read the good and the bad and the ugly. I mean, there's a lot of good things and there's a lot of ugly things. I don't know how God put up with Abram pulling this thing, especially when he does it again. Nevertheless, it is, in comparison with, the only thing I can figure is in comparison with the rest of the people, he was a sterling example of goodness. Now, at chapter 13, so Abram went up from Egypt to the Negev. And again, right here, we're going from the Negev, and the Negev desert is going to be, well, it's down south of Bethlehem. This is the Dead Sea. And so he goes, here's Bethel and Ai and Shechem. And so as you look at this, you get some idea of the mountainous terrain that's there, because what this map has is some reliefs in there to show you just exactly how desperate this is. Now, okay, the Sea of Galilee right here, that sea is 940 feet below sea level. The entrance to this sea is 1,340 feet below sea level. And so we sometimes sing a song about there is a sea which day by day, and we're talking the first verse about the Sea of Galilee and how it gives. And then we talk about, and the Dead Sea, which does not give. And in the far southern end of this, I will tell you, it's incredible as you see the salt crystals out in the water. The salt in the Dead Sea is about 10 times as concentrated as it is in the ocean. About 33%, and they're salt crystals. And the fellow who was guiding us as we went down to the southern end, down to Taba, which is in Egypt now. But as we went down there, Denis came to the southern end of the Dead Sea. He got us out. He said, "I want to do something for you." He said, "I want you to all, when I say, hold your breath so that you will not hear the sounds of breathing." And he said, "This place is so silent you cannot believe it. You do not hear a single sound." There's nothing that I know of that made a greater impression on me than the words of the song, "The sea is waste and dead. There is no inhabitation. Nothing down there. Nothing grows. There is no sound of any kind. It's just absolutely quiet." And quite eerie, I would say. But as you're looking at this, again, this is down at the southern end, which is not on this. By the way, up here at the top, I do have Canaan lived, and you can see, here's the Salt Sea, Edom, Moab, and Ammon. You can see the other countries that are named in this as we look at it. Going back to our reading then, he went as far from the Negev, he's going north now, as far as Bethel, to the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai. Skipping a verse, "And the land could not sustain them while dwelling together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to remain together. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. Now the Canaanite and the Perizzite were dwelling in the land." They're not the only ones there, but they have such huge flocks that they cannot get to the watering holes. They don't have enough grass in order to sustain them. And so not Abram and Lot, but those who work for them, and these were probably slaves or indentured servants, who would be completely dependent upon Abram or on Lot for their livelihood, And that's where the problem arises. And so, again, as we look at this map, between Bethel and there's Bethel right there in Ai. There's the two places. So here's the Sea of Galilee. Here's the Dead Sea, to give you some idea of what we're talking about. Here would be Bethlehem. Jerusalem is right there. They're not big places at this time. You know, as you think about coming to Shiloh, and until Shiloh come, there are the names of the places that are important in this history that we're looking at. And so, at verse 10, Abram said there shouldn't be any strife between us. You guys should go, Lot, you take your herds, you choose which way to go, and I'll go the other way. Lot lifted up his eyes and saw all the valleys of the Jordan. Again, as you look at the Jordan River, that's fresh water. It's flowing in there on a regular basis. There's water that comes down from the hills, further up, even in what we would call today Lebanon. And as you look at that, you can see that there's just a beautiful place where all kinds of crops grow. It's a wonderful climate. It's nice and warm. It has mild winters. They're about the temperature that we have here, except without all the wet weather. But they moderate much better than it does here. It's sort of like being in the southern United States. It gets just as cold there, but it doesn't stay as cold as long. So he says that it was well watered everywhere. And then he said this was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord. In other words, this was like the Garden of Eden. This place was a place where there were tremendous amounts of date palms. And, you know, the nice thing about a date palm, all you've got to do is get those dates down, and you just send a person up there. They can climb those barefooted, cut those down, and grapes grow in clusters that can be like so and so. You know, an individual date, if you haven't seen one, is about the size between a dime and a quarter, and they're about, 2.5 to 3 inches long. They're just wonderfully sweet. They are rich and a source of food that is just incredible. You eat those things and you can get fat in a hurry. And so that's the land that he's looking at. There's plenty of grass for all his herdsmen to use. So Lot, being a good nephew, chose for himself all the valley of the Jordan. He took the very best place. That was fine with Abram. Abram knew all of this was going to go to his descendants, and he didn't have any yet. And so they separated from each other. Abram settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled in the cities of the valley and moved his tents as far as Sodom. Now, here again, I've included a different map. And the reason for this is I wanted to show you, as we're looking here at Jerusalem and we come up to Bethel and Ai, over here is the Dead Sea, and right up there somewhere is the Sea of Galilee. But notice all these ripples here. These are tremendous ravines and mountains. The Jericho Road, you may remember that song, "On the Jericho Road, There's Room for Just Two." Two people wide. As you go up that road, you can pass one other, but you're not going to pass two abreast, because one will fall off a cliff. And the cliff that goes along that Jericho Road is a real cliff. You're going to be several hundred feet down that thing if you fall off, and you won't survive. So this Jericho Road, though, goes all the way up to Jerusalem. Another thing that you need to realize that the Scriptures always do, they travel up to Jerusalem. Now, around here, we don't pay much attention. We think up maybe north or up to somewhere. There, they're always talking about elevation. In the Bible, you never find an error. If it says up, you've got to go up. From Jericho, you had to go up to Jerusalem. And you had to go down to the Sea of Galilee, or down to the Sea of the Dead Sea. Either way, the Bible is precise about that. And it's just another one of those small things that tells you for certain that the Bible is absolutely true. But again, here we are. We're looking at this place right around here. And again, as they look toward the plains, over here is where all the good ground is. Stuff doesn't grow well on the rocks in the hills, and there are lots of them in Israel. So at verse 14, the Lord said to Abram, after Lot had separated from him, now lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the land which you see, I will give it to you and to your descendants forever. And I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if anyone can number the dust of the earth, then your descendants can also be numbered. Then Abram moved his tent and came to dwell by the oaks of Mamre, which are in Hebron, and there he built an altar to the Lord. This morning in class, Kwaku showed a picture of the billions of stars that there are in the heavens. At the time that the Bible was written, they didn't know about telescopes. The most stars that anyone could catalog with the naked eye, they did not have telescopes, are about 3,000, no matter where you are on the earth. And for many years, people thought, well, you know, it's just a gross exaggeration on the part of the Lord when he wrote the Bible to say, your descendants will be like the sands of the dust of the earth, or like the stars of the sky. Because there's 3,000, you could count them, versus who could count the number of grains of sand. Well, it turns out engineers look at such things, and they want to know how many grains of sand there are, and they've calculated it. It turns out that their calculation is about the same as the number of stars that we think are in the universe right now. As Kwaku said this morning, it's an illustration of how great our God is, that he created all of these things. Now, when you think about the millions and millions of grains of sand, what you're trying to do is you're trying to point out he's not going to have, now there's Abram and a bunch of his servants and his nephew Lot, and their wives. And you look at that and you say, well, there's nothing else around here. How are we going to get millions upon millions of descendants? You'll recall that during World War II, Hitler wiped out 6 million Jews, killed them, in an effort to just eradicate them from the face of the earth. And his plan was to continue that. But the people are so numerous that it fits exactly with what God told Abram would happen. From you and your descendants, I will make a great nation. The land you see, I will give to you and your descendants. I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if anyone can number the dust of the earth, then your descendants can also be numbered. The one thing that we know for certain at the present time is there is a huge mission on the part of those who are believers in Islam to eradicate the Jewish nation completely from the face of the earth, wherever they are. It's an old thing that's happening. It's what God said would happen between Ishmael and Isaac. And as you start looking at this, you will see that all of these things still are noticeable today. So Abram moved his tent and came and dwelt at the oaks of Mamre. Whoops, I'm not on the right one there. But again, the oaks of Mamre, right here is Hebron. Now this is the Dead Sea, the Salt Sea. And here's Hebron. And let's see. They don't have Jerusalem on here, but this, it's down to this, right over here somewhere. South, yeah. And so as we look at this, again, it looks like he's in a really hilly country, and that's true. Coming then to chapter 14, and I skip a bunch of things. I'd certainly encourage you all to read them. I do this for sake of time, and because a lot of names in there get real boring, and they're not things that you're going to want to remember or need to remember. You might want to. So there are the kings, four kings against five. There's a war going on here. And the valley of Siddim was full of tar pits. It's interesting that even in that time they had oil sources that came to the surface. The kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled, and they fell into them. Those who survived fled to the hill country. I would urge you to think, as you read the scriptures, when it says king of something, it's sort of like mayor of a small village in the outback somewhere. These people are called kings, but they're kings over perhaps one or two or three villages. So they really don't have that many followers. This is not millions of people going to war like there are in World War II or World War I or what's happening today even there. There just weren't that many people around. And so when it says a king, literally they owed their allegiance to someone who is there, and Sodom and Gomorrah are cities of some size, but remember, as we look at this, Capernaum, at the time of Christ, which is one of his bases, had about 5,000 people. And Jerusalem probably had around 200 to 250,000 people. And so they're not large cities. They're cities larger than that all around. But you'll also recall that they were smaller in absolute size because they had to walk everywhere, and so they built things up, and they didn't go out, and they didn't have a lot of room to live in unless they were kings. So these who survived fled to the hill country. Then they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their food supply and departed. And they also took Lot, Abram's nephew, and his possessions and departed, for he was living in Sodom. Now, again, as we look at this, they're going to be headed to the north here, and as we think about where Lot is, he's over here by these plains. This is the Dead Sea, so he's going to be up in this direction a considerable distance. When Abram heard that his relative had been taken captive, he led his trained men born in his house, 318. Here's an extremely wealthy man. Slavery was commonplace, and indentured servitude was commonplace, because if you didn't band together at this time, you simply couldn't survive. People would come and say, hey, if you'll take me on, I'll be your slave. And there were rules. I am always amazed when I see some man going around with a big earring or a big diamond stone in his ear. When a man's ear is pierced, it means he is a slave and he is bound for all his life. He's agreed to it. And he will not depart. And so I see a lot of those in descendants of people who were at one time slaves and wonder, do they not know? They don't read their Bible. Men don't have pierced ears unless it is to be known as a slave. On the other hand, women are pierced repeatedly. So As you look at that, it's just something to wonder about. There are 318 men who are born here. So they're going to be a larger number of women. And so Abram is evidently an exceedingly wealthy man at that time, having the herds and flocks. He divides his forces against them by night, he and his servants, and defeated them, and pursued them as far as Hobah, which is north of Damascus. Damascus is not on any of these maps. I chopped off the top of it because it would have been too small, I thought, for you to see. He brought back all the goods and also brought back his relative Lot with his possessions and also the women and the people. So everything that they had gathered there was recovered. And then we read about this man Melchizedek, king of Salem. Salem is just simply peace. He brought out bread and wine. Now, he was a priest of God Most High. And at this time, there are no Jews and Gentiles. Abraham, as yet, has no children, no descendants. All those people are people who have been born in his house. And he blessed him and said, blessed be Abraham of God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth. So this Melchizedek, about whom we know nothing concerning his beginning, he just comes out and he's there and he's a king, a priest, a high priest of God. He said, blessed be God Most High, who's delivered your enemies into your hand. And he gave him a tenth of all. That is, Abram paid tithes to Melchizedek. And the king of Sodom said to Abram, give the people to me and take the goods for yourself. And Abram said to the king of Sodom, I have sworn to the Lord God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth, that I will not take a thread or a sandal thong or anything that is yours, lest you should say, I have made Abram rich. I will take nothing except the young men who have eaten, and should the share of the men who went with me, Abner, Ishcol, and Mamre, let them take their share. And so he doesn't ask for the goods. We switch now to, having finished the reading of Genesis 14, looking at this Melchizedek and the two things that you have just seen there. Psalms 110, as it says, a psalm of David, the Lord says to my Lord, sit at my right hand and I'll make thine enemies a footstool for thy feet. You immediately will recall that this is a prophecy of the Christ. The Lord will stretch forth thy strong scepter from Zion. Zion is always the figure of the church of our Lord Christ, saying, rule in the midst of thine enemies, which is exactly where Jesus now reigns. Thy people will volunteer freely in the day of thy power in holy array. From the womb of the dawn, thy youth are to thee as the dew. The Lord has sworn and will not change his mind. Thou art a priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek. David says this prophetically. When we come to Matthew, the 22nd chapter, verse 41, the Pharisees gathered together. Jesus asked them a question. What do you think about the Christ? Whose son is he? They said to him, the son of David. He said to them, how is it then that David in the Spirit calls him Lord, saying, the Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand until I put your enemies under your feet. If then David calls him Lord, how is he his son? They didn't have a clue as to what this thing meant. No one was able to answer him a word, nor from that day did anyone dare ask him any more questions. That had all the answers given that they wanted to hear from Jesus. In Hebrews, the 7th chapter, the Hebrew writer starts, and he makes this comparison for us. For this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of Most High God, met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him. And to him Abraham apportioned a tenth part of everything. He is first, by translation of his name, king of righteousness. And then he is also king of Salem, that is, king of peace. He is without father or mother or genealogy, having neither beginning of days nor end of life. But resembling the Son of God, he continues a priest forever. In other words, you don't know where he came from and you don't know where he's going. We have no knowledge of that. But concerning Almighty God, Jesus is like this high priest Melchizedek, having neither beginning of days nor end of life. The reason for that is he was from the beginning and he is eternal in his nature. As you recognize the power of God in giving these promises to Abraham centuries before they came to pass, it is hard for me to believe that someone would not understand that this Jesus is the Christ. These things were told centuries before. Whoever believes and is baptized will be saved, is what Jesus told his disciples to preach. Whoever does not believe will be condemned. If you're here and there's any way we can help you, won't you let us know as together we stand and we sing.